Hello everyone, I hope you're doing great today. I have quite a stuffy nose, so sorry if my voice is different for this video or the next few. Make sure you check out my Instagram at JoeTheInsomniac and the podcast in the description below. And as always, there's a message before the video starts, so if you'd like to listen to the stories, then there's timestamps in the description below for that. So for today, I'd like to share this. You have the power to be anyone you want to be. And you're capable of far more than you realize. You just have to work on your own mind and control your thoughts. And if you're struggling with mental health issues, make sure you go out and seek therapy. I know there's negative stigmas attached to it, but honestly, the people that say that have never suffered themselves or are closed to the world around them, so don't listen to them. It's okay to get help, and it can change your life. And remember, you might not know exactly what issue you have. I know because that's what happened to me. So it's very important, even if you have a slight feeling something is wrong, to do some research on Google and then go out and seek some therapist. I hope that can make a difference to someone. Take care and enjoy the stories. I hope you have a good week. My best friend and neighbor, who I'll refer to as Jacob, knew these woods just as well as I did. We had several choice spots that we'd like to go hike in. And a couple of makeshift forts that we made out of sticks and such. Keep in mind that things were simpler back then, and our parents felt no real need to worry about us and were accustomed to us disappearing for a good while, going to explore the woods. This was also before cell phones were a thing. One more important thing about this is that these woods were once home to Native Americans, more specifically, the Comanche tribe. We would actually find arrowheads left by the natives sometimes. We found this fascinating, and going out in the woods really felt like stepping away from the modern world for a while. One afternoon, Jacob and I packed up some water and snacks and set out into the woods like we had many times before. Usually, we would stick to the trails or the creek, so that way we can find our way back home easily. But today, we had an urge to explore even deeper than we'd ever gone before. We headed off the trail into the uncharted areas of the preserve that our parents hadn't let us go before. Things were fine at first, but we soon realized that the trees had got incredibly dense. It became increasingly difficult to walk through, as dead tree branches seemed to reach and claw at us from every step. We both managed to find ourselves a sturdy stick and use it as a machete, chopping and carving our paths through the trees. There was no longer any trail around at one point. We didn't really care. We were incredible kids who knew these woods well. What's the worst that could happen? We had been proceeding like this for about 20 minutes when we get a horrible feeling. That feeling that you're being watched. Jacob and I look at each other at practically exactly the same time, and he said, "Dude, do you feel it?" I said, "Yeah, I feel it." We both agree that something is very wrong now. We can't actually describe exactly why, but we have the feeling of dread as though we're being watched, and agree we have to head back. We turned around now, making our way back. But after several minutes, we started having doubts that we knew where we were. The woods are more dense here, denser than any other part of the preserve that we've seen, and it was nearly impossible to move in. We were getting tired from hacking away and decided to stop and get our bearings together. That's when we noticed it. Something else, completely silent, save for our labored breathing. These woods, normally teeming with life, were absolutely still. I still haven't experienced anything like it to this day. We couldn't hear a single bug, or a bird, or rushing creek water. It was a sudden deadening here. These comfortable woods that we're so familiar with suddenly felt alien and hostile. We still had the feeling of being watched, although stalking might be a better word for it. Jacob and I were absolutely done with the adventure by now. We were completely turned around, and we couldn't even tell if we're heading back the way we come now. He tried to climb a tree to see where we were, but This actually is quite a difficult thing to do. Now the branches were so thick that it actually blacks out the sun a bit. When climbing the tree, we realise we can't actually get up this, and we both start yelling in hopes that someone might hear us. Now, we rely on each other because nobody's around. It was at this moment in desperation that we spotted something through the trees, probably about 20 or so yards away. Out of the corner of our eyes, we clearly saw an adult-sized figure quickly moving behind a tree once we spotted it. Jacob and I share one panicked look at each other before sprinting. We're like human wrecking balls to the branches, no longer taking the care to actually not be hit by them. Branches clawed and scrapped at our arms, cutting them. My legs burned, but I didn't care. At one point, Jacob, who's wearing a backpack full of water and socks and stuff, got snagged on a particularly big branch. I stopped to help untangle him. We keep going, not daring to look behind us. A few times I might have heard something breaking branches as it follows us, but I can't be certain. We continue running for ages. It's a good 20 minutes. We finally managed to break through the tree line into a clearing. I was so relieved that I actually cried. I wish the story ended here. I wish I could chalk it up to our imagination or being stupid kids, but I can't. It turns out this clearing was essentially the backyard of a very large and very old two-story home. A house that we didn't know existed until now. Decades old blue paint on the exterior is peeling off. The roof was missing several shingles, many of which were lying in the overgrown grass below. The house had several large windows that were cracked. A single dirt road that made its way in front of the house up a small hill, and we can't actually see where it leads to. It was obvious that the house wasn't part of our neighbourhood, or any neighbourhood we'd been to before that matter. Jacob and I were halfway terrified and halfway in awe at our discovery. The house felt like our own personal discovery after a perilous quest. A bit of our fear from the woods evaporated as we summoned the courage to actually go inside. We walk up to the side of the house that was on our left and peer through the dirty window into the strange house. The first floor seemed to consist mainly of one large room. Along the wall opposite was a wooden staircase leading to the second floor. The first floor is completely devoid of furniture, no tables or chairs or couches or anything. Just dozens upon dozens of broken windows, shards of glass covered almost the entirety of the first floor, as well as yellowed books and magazines that were sprawled open, some with pages that are clearly ripped out laying next to them. And in the centre of the room was a single sleeping bag, filthy from what we can see, with an unlit candlestick next to it. "What the hell are you doing?" we hear, and I nearly faint. We immediately pull away from the window, and we saw that a man had walked around from the right side of the building, staring at us. He's wearing nothing but some disgustingly dirty denim overalls. He has scarred skin that looks like rough old leather, and his eyes. Neither of his eyes were looking in the same direction. Neither one is actually looking straight at us. Everything about the man looks wrong. You know how some people, you can just feel their energy? Yep, that's him. We stared at him for a moment until Jacob said, we're just looking at the house. The stranger seemed to take a moment to digest his response, saying, "You should head back the way you come right now. You never know." And it's a never know part of the sentence that hung in the air so harrowingly. Jacob, God bless him, quickly thought of something to say. "Actually, we need to head to the road." We both look at each other and decide to sprint out of there. We don't waste a second longer. We get out of the house as quick as possible through the driveway, trying not to appear scared. I say driveway because there's no cars there, not even a garage, but it's kind of like one. The front of the house consists of a porch, which is also littered with old cans, broken bottles, and yellow bags from old magazines. We felt the man's eyes boring into our backs. There's a horrible smile on his face. We start running again, eventually reaching the pavement. There was no mailbox or address that we could see. We followed this pavement for quite a while. It felt like ages before we could actually begin to recognize where we are again. Turns out, we thought we had gone through the entire nature preserve and were on the complete opposite side of where we thought we were. And eventually, we make it back home. We never told our parents what happened because they'd never let us out again, and we didn't go back into the woods for weeks. And when we did go back, we rarely even left the comfort of the very close bounds to the paths. To this day, Jacob's paranoid and convinced that something weird's going on there. I still can't believe we found ourselves in the midst of a complete stranger's home who appears to be a psychopath in the middle of nowhere. And I'm never gonna forget the feelings of dread and spookiness in those woods. I'll never know if those feelings were related to where we were, but thank God we made it out of there alive. If you're interested in what I look like in real life and want to learn more about me, then follow my Instagram page at JoeTheInsomniac. Hey everyone, I hope you're all having a great day. I really hope you enjoy these stories. My voice has finally went 100% back to normal and I'm so pleased to be back in a normal routine. Like, I'm one of them people that really need structure to function and I'm so glad that I've got it back. With that out of the way, let's get back to the stories. My husband and I are amateur mushroom hunters. 3 seasons out of the year, we spend weekends in forests, along natural trails and rivers looking for edible and interesting wild mushrooms to harvest. Springtime brings the most exciting hunt, which is for the highly coveted morels. We know of a special stretch of shoreline along a river that has a few dozen morels each year. It's difficult to get to as it's off the beaten path. You have to do quite a lot of ducking and climbing and maneuvering to get through. One day, 2 years ago, we're doing just that, making our way slowly, searching carefully for mushrooms hidden in plain sight. We're so preoccupied that we don't realize we're being watched or followed. But at one point, we see a man up ahead of us. He's looking at us and not saying anything or moving. It's almost as though he wants to be noticed. My husband saw him first. Who then turns around to look at me, because we never encountered anyone in that spot before. It was besides a small and fairly busy park, but people didn't stray from the paved walk much. There's a weird energy about him. It can be described as menacing. We were near the end of what we wanted to look at. We turn around and started walking our way back. We look behind us for a few moments and realize that he's gone. We wrote it off as just some weirdo, or maybe just a homeless guy whose territory we stumbled into. Now we continued looking over the spots we already covered in case we missed any morals. With me in front and my husband behind me, we're looking back every few paces, as we're feeling more paranoid as we go on. All of a sudden, I look up from the ground at my feet. The man is blocking our path up ahead, maybe 30 feet. We have to go left at the riverbank. We've realized he's crept alongside us on the path, getting ahead of us, now cutting us off. I whip around with huge eyes at my husband, who looks over my shoulder, sees him, starts to move up on the hill to our right hand side, grabbing my hand to pull me with him. Adrenaline shot into me, and we go out of the thick bush onto the paved path, into an open park moments later. Without speaking, we break into a full sprint towards the direction of our car, several blocks away. When we are far enough away from the riverbank to risk a backward glance, we saw the man emerge from the brush. He just stood there watching us, motionless. To this day, it still bothers me, and I wonder what would have happened had I been there alone. So this happened a year ago. I'm a 17-year-old girl. My family, aunts, uncles and cousins, etc., all share this cottage in a nearby campground. We've had it in the family since my mum was a teen, so since I was little, I've been going out there. Since we've been going out there for so long, we know the community well. A lot of strong bonds have formed with the neighbours and nearby campers, because everyone knows each other. This one particular incident, my friend and I, who were about 10 at the time, were out for a long walk. We only ever hung out there, where the lake is, so we often went hiking along the same trail to kill time, which passed by a forest in the heart of the community. As we strolled along the path, we heard a light ching coming from the forest to our left. Our head snapped in the direction of the sound, and it stops. We shrug it off as we're 10, and don't get freaked out easily. We continue walking as the path turned, and our backs are now to where we started, but can hear the sound again. Once we're walking, we turn to where the sound's coming from, and once again, it stops. Now, I don't know why we continued walking away, but we did. The forest was now a ways behind us when it starts up again. This time, I turned towards a mysterious song and started walking. The flute didn't stop playing, but instead got faster. I slowed my steps and realized the speed of the song, and it stopped once again. The second we start walking away from the flutist, it bounces back into action and I start running to the tree line. The song ended when I was a few meters away, and the silence that followed was deafening. The girl I'm with took off running towards the main road and I followed. Now, it could have been nothing, but for some reason, we didn't tell anyone about what happened. Nothing like that ever happened again, but freaks me out thinking about it. Someone who we knew went missing that day. A person in our small community. Why? Who knows? I guess we'll never know what happened if we had actually crossed that tree line that day. It all started when a buddy of mine that I go to college with, Matt, and I decided to skip a day of class and take a weekend trip up to Penn, Earl County to get some late fall dirt biking in before it snowed and the season's over. We'd gotten some riding done in that area before, but instead of going to our usual romping grounds, we opted to shoot for a lesser known trail that a friend had told us about. So early Tuesday morning, we loaded up our bikes into our truck, printed out a map of the area that showed all the logging trails and a few official dirt bike trails in the area, and head out. Traffic was really light, so we arrive at the spot we're planning to. It only takes about 1.5 hours to get there. We have lots of daylight to go out and ride in. We both have headlights on our bikes and have agreed that a little bit of darkness won't stop our fun. After we unload, we lock up the truck, roll down the highway on the shoulder for about 0.5 mile, then turned onto the logging roads with this awesome split off. It's a 10-ish mile ride down the logging trail to get to the trailhead, and we're probably a little over halfway there when, from behind us, we hear a loud engine. The speedster of a truck flies past us, nearly hitting Matt, then disappearing around the next turn, just as quick as he appears. It's not like Matt and I were going slow. We aren't pro riders or anything, but definitely not bad. The last time I checked, my tack were doing 40, which is pretty quick for a crappy abandoned logger's road in the forest. After this, Matt had stopped on the side killing his engine so he could make sure he knew how annoyed he was. "Did you see that? Yeah, he almost killed me," we said, etc. We decided that, while we were already stopped, we would take a quick break, drink some water, then get back on. And get back on we did. We found the trailhead and were loving it. The views were nice. The trail was technical without being unfun. The ground was wet and not soggy, and there were tons of additional trails that had been marked out by riders. Eventually, we came across two separate offshoot trails and were going up the hill. We're racing one another to the top. We then read a sign marked "ends at such and such creek," signs that are made from plywood and spray paint propped against trees. After consulting the map, we concluded that they probably did. One trail went over the hill, and the other more or less wound down into a small valley and around. I wanted to go low. Matt wanted to go higher, so we split up. My ride was nice for the most part, though it did become very gravelly and steep at times, and I reached the bottom of the little valley, and as soon as I could see an open clearing at the end of the tunnel of trees I was in, and as I rode up, I could hear what I thought to be Matt's engine. When I pulled off to the trees into the clearing by the creek, I saw that it wasn't a dirt bike I'd been hearing, but a gas-powered generator. This was powering what looked like an old stove that sat under the overhang of a windowless shack made out of pliers and 2x4s. Next to the makeshift house thing was a truck that I had seen earlier. I killed my engine, not wanting whoever's inside to hear me, and moved in a bit closer. I didn't get too close, but even from where I stood, probably 50 yards or more away, I could smell something. I could see that there's a big soup pot stove which was boiling, and I can only presume it's holding bleach. Judging by the containers that were strewn about the place. Now that's when I saw a guy coming running from behind the shack with a shotgun, looking at the woods near the other side of the clearing, screaming, "What do you think you're doing?" At that moment, I heard Matt's bike roar to life and immediately saw him tearing out of the tree line behind the shack. He saw me, and he rode towards me at full tilt. I hear him screaming at the top of his lungs, "Go, get out of there, he's got a gun." Luckily, my bike starts on the first kick and I'm able to spin around and tear out of there the way that I'd come on Matt's towel. I don't think I've ever gone so fast through the trails in my life, but somehow we made it out without either of us going down. We got back to the truck in little under an hour and immediately noticed that ours was no longer the only one in the parking lot. The goddamn piece of pickup junk was there and beating us. He must have had a shortcut, the driver staring at us. hoping that he won't approach us as we're right off a decently populated highway. We quickly load up and leave. But he follows, and it was more than an hour before we were able to even lose him. The local police are called, but they pretty much told us that they can't look into it because they wouldn't have time to. Needless to say, we never went right in there again. I'm a 25-year-old female and have been living in Tokyo for 7 years. Never once had I felt threatened until this day. The city is incredibly safe, making you forget about stranger danger, which I know is unimaginable if you live in most big cities. Now, it happened a year ago. I went to see an orchestra with my friend, which finishes at around 10:30. She goes home, and it's a beautiful night, so I decided that I was gonna go for a walk around this area of the city. It's a part that I never normally go to, Tokyo Station. Now, on a semi-empty street, this 40-year-old man, dressed like a salaryman, stops, asks me how to get the subway. Now, it's a bit odd, but whatever. I pull out Google Maps, giving him directions. When I look up, I realized he wasn't listening and staring directly at me with these creepy eyes and a smile. He then said, "Where are you going?" I tell him I'm meeting my boyfriend, which is a lie. He then says if he can walk with me. I firmly say no. I turned around and walk away. Suddenly I hear him cry behind me, "Please, I beg you, please," in English, and he's literally on his knees. I freak out and begin walking away fast. When I look back, he got back to his feet and was walking in the same direction as me. Now, I know I should have been more freaked out, but it does happen that random Japanese guys ask to walk and talk with me. I'm mixed Asian but look more foreign. They give up after I firmly show I don't want them there, usually harmless. I get to the busy train station, which is basically thousands of people, like fish calling. I move in random directions for 20 minutes to lose him. By that time, I'm pretty certain he couldn't have followed me in the crowd. I relax and stupidly go back to my plan of taking a walk by myself at night. I know. I walk through the gardens of the Imperial Palace with a huge park with no lights and no one to be seen at this time of day. I take dark, empty streets. I've forgotten about the creepy guy and just admire my surroundings, the architecture, and enjoy the quietness. I walk for almost an hour. I'm 4 stations away from where I met the creepy guy. It's past midnight, so I catch the last train home. I then go down the stairs to the closest station. I decide to stop and look down at my phone to check how to get home when I feel a tap on my shoulder. It's that creepy guy again, with even more insane eyes and smile. That's when dumb me finally realized psychos followed me through a crowd of people, a dark park, and a small empty street for over an hour. I start yelling my lungs out and making threatening gestures to get him away from me, and I run to the gates where there's more people. He then runs for one to catch me. I pretend to go down the stairs to the platform and then quickly behind a column. I see him run past me, frantically searching for me with his crazy eyes, but he doesn't look back. He doesn't see me. I run back up the stairs and get a different train. I call my boyfriend, who met me halfway up home. This went over the course of a year, with the last incident taking place in December of 2016. I used to own this green 1998 Toyota Camry. It was my grandmother's until she gifted it to my parents, who eventually gave it to me as my first car. It was nice and reliable, but I had a bad habit of letting my cars accumulate a bunch of stuff before cleaning them out. Because I still lived with my mum and dad, they would use the car from time to time if needed. One day, I noticed a bunch of fishing lines with hooks on them in the back of my car, on the rare occasions I cleaned it out. Now, we lived in a forest, so it's normal to see people going fishing in the nearby lakes, but why on my car? A bunch of hooks are embedded into the upholstery, and more are between the creases in the seat. It takes me forever to get them all out. I almost pricked myself several times doing it. I have no idea how long they're up there. And the last time I cleaned out my car was months ago. At any rate, I'm annoyed. At first, I thought my dad had put them there, as he had recently used my car for a garage sale. I asked him about it, but he told me he's never seen any fishing hooks or lines in any of this old stuff. And nobody in the family even fishes, so it wouldn't make any sense for us to have used it. He's also the only other person that has used my car at all in the last 2 years. I'm the kind of person who looks up everything, every night. I triple check my doors and I'm even a little uncertain as to whether or not to lock up when I go back to my car and check, no matter the inconvenience. I also park it where I can see it from my bedroom window and hear if anyone tampers with it, so I doubted anyone could have broken in, and I assume my dad's missed it and didn't think anything of it. Until a month later when I found even more fish hooks in my back seat. At this point, I ask my dad about it again, but he figures I'm either pulling a weird prank on him or someone's breaking into my car. I wonder though why anyone would break into my car, not steal anything out of it, and leave fishing hooks instead. It doesn't make sense to me. To give you an idea of how weird this is, I live in a neighborhood where everyone knows each other. We all talk and even have a private Facebook group that started due to a drug house at the end of the street cropping up. As sort of a neighborhood watch group that always posts whenever something suspicious happens. So I don't have any neighbors for miles, and the ones I do know are not shady. Again, without any explanation or clear motive, as the days and weeks pass, it fades to the back of my head. I get a new job selling mattresses, as I've been unemployed focusing on school for a while and move out of my mum and dad's home to live with my girlfriend. This is when things turn from weird to extremely unsettling. One night, we decide to go to a nearby Winco to get something to make food with, and I notice my back seat has a bunch of fishing lines and hooks in it again. Startled, I look around for any sign of someone being nearby. I tell her to get back in the home, and I sit up and stare at my car until morning comes from our bedroom window. Now, after triple checking every door and window to ensure they're all locked up, I don't see anyone or anything. I get ready for work, and she gets ready for college courses, and we leave. The store I was working at during this time had a weird L-shaped design to it, with two different entrances and a calf taking up space between them. There was one entrance that was easily visible from the front desk, and another that you'd have to get up to see. As I was closing up for the night after the last incident, I go to turn off the open signs and see in the center of the obstructed hallway an entire row of fishing line coiled up, but with some of the line leading to the door where a pile of hooks sat. I had no customers this day and never heard the alarm go off. Then I noticed someone had turned the door alarm off, but neither I nor my colleagues had actually ever tampered with the device before then, and it was behind the front desk. I was shaken. Someone had been stalking me and leaving these lines, but I had no idea what to do. Call the cops? Other than the fishing lines and hooks, there really was no trace to anyone. My store had no cameras, and corporate would never agree to installing them. Neither my family nor girlfriend could afford security cameras either. I figure the best I can do is not appear as frightened as I am, in case whoever was doing this to me was watching me. I thought that if I see something like this, I shouldn't have to go about my day differently from any other, or it's suspicious. Now, for several months, I would always find fishing lines and hooks in my car, despite it being locked, and my parents being too busy with their extra jobs, taking time to actually look at the car. Now, once or twice a day, I would leave notes in my car asking whoever it was, why are they doing this, and to stop. I would find the notes were gone whenever the lines and hooks appeared, but with no response. Eventually, after a series of misunderstandings and disagreements with her family, I decided to move out of my girlfriend's house and moved in with a couple of friends into their apartment until my parents' new house could be completed. The very last time I had an encounter with the lines and hooks, I came home from work to find them strewn about the living room. Stuff is knocked all over the place and there's a few things broken, but nothing was taken. My friend, his girlfriend and their baby are all gone at the time, so no one was home when this happened, save for his cats, who are absolutely spooked and wouldn't come out from under his bed for hours. I still didn't know what this person wants or wanted. Why are they stalking me in the first place? What do the fishing lines and hooks mean? No one I know is actually huge into fishing, and I specifically go out of my way to not make enemies or cross people, even purposefully giving people more than I take from them so I don't feel that I'm lining myself up to get done over. I really don't know if it was someone that I knew or a complete stranger freaking me out. All I know is that I'm gonna have anxiety for the rest of my life. I routinely stay up till 4 or 5 in the morning because of the traumatizing events. This has truly touched me in a bad way. Now, it's been about 9 months since I've seen or heard from this person, but instead of feeling better, I feel more uneasy that someone followed me through that many changes in my life and didn't do anything further than breaking into my work and friend's house, but that at any time could have easily done anything to me or set up a trap or God knows what. If you're interested in what I look like in real life and want to learn more about me, then follow my Instagram page @JoeTheInsomniac. I took a gap semester a couple of years ago and decided that I should take a road trip with a buddy who was also taking a semester off from school. We are from the Midwest and planned our trip to take a big circle from Ohio to LA, up to Portland, and then back home. We're outdoorsy guys, so we knew we were trying to hit some wilderness along the way. So we're about a month into the trip and leaving Portland, where we were taking a break from camping every night while on the road, itching to get back on the road and into the wilderness. My buddy finds a hike that looks interesting. It was an abandoned railroad about 2 miles east of Portland. He had found the GPS coordinates on some site and said it was meant to be really cool with a couple of tunnels and a massive test bridge. Sounds cool, I'm in. So I drive my Volvo station wagon towards the coordinates. If you've never been to Oregon, it's beautiful. Foggy, never-ending views like thick pine forests. The type of place that you can barely see 20 feet in any direction because how dense the trees are. For the last hour or so of this 2-hour drive, we are driving on logging roads. Haven't passed a single car or seen any life since turning off a rural highway. It's creepy. Endless dark forest for hours. Stop. I hit the brakes. My buddy is squinting at his phone. Looks like we're at the coordinate. I pull to the side of the one lane and park. Dense trees surround us. I can see up ahead that there's a linear gap in a canopy. I guess that's a railroad. We hop out of the car and I unload my day pack with my camera, headlamp, water, and pepper spray and knife. After a second thought, I put the knife in my pocket. The railroad has been abandoned for 50 years. This means that while you can still see the tracks while standing on them, thick brush has filled the entire sweep that is typically cleared on either side of the tracks. This has been nearly filled in, except for a foot-wide path that has been maintained by deer, bear, and elk, and maybe some humans. I notice my buddy is also looking at a private property sign that's fading into a nearby tree. He looks at me, and I shrug. We begin walking. Tracks are dead straight. This means that we can see a couple of hundred yards down the center of this green tunnel of vegetation. It's as though I'm in a very narrow alleyway that never ends. I can hardly see 10 feet in front of me, too. It's winding a bit. Now, honestly, it's a boring hike considering there's no view and it's dead straight at times. But we knew the tunnel was up ahead, so we keep going. I keep myself busy, trying to pace my stride with each railroad tire, step after step. We walk about 3 miles away from the car into the woods. Suddenly, I stop though, and my buddy bumps into my backpack. I had just looked up from my feet and was staring into a looming tunnel in front of us, covered in moss. And the entrance surrounded a black hole that went right into a mountainside. Again, we shrug, turn on our headlamps, and begin moving again. Graffiti covered what wasn't covered with moss, and moss was covering the other areas. Our headlamps dimly lit walls covered in fairly creepy graffiti. I said eye to eye of a 20-foot mummy. I couldn't see my hand in front of my face, it's so dark. We can't see the end of the tunnel. Drips of water are echoing around us. My buddy and I quickly walk down the tracks. I have my knife out now. I'm relieved to get out from the exit of the tunnel. I could already see a massive gorge up ahead. The tracks went across a wooden bridge that screamed P&W. It's easy to forget the creepiness of the tunnel, and I looked forward to busting out my camera. Once I set off on the bridge, I realized the danger of crossing something that hadn't been maintained in 50 or so years. The wood was clearly aged, and in some places rotten. But the view is incredible. We balanced on the steel tracks and walked to the center of the tessile, where we could see a river about 500 feet below. Horrible loggins guard the mountainside. I noticed where the boards had been broken, and I hope nobody fallen. Instead of turning back after getting some good shots, we keep going. The sun was starting to loom at an angle and was blocked by the steep mountains around us. We quickly walk off the bridge and back into our green tunnel. For some reason, I start having second thoughts. I don't know why this come to me now, but I slowed my pace and started thinking, how would I ask my buddy to turn around? Before I was going to turn around and ask Nate, I glanced up ahead at the tracks and stared directly into somebody's eyes 200 yards ahead. I stop in my tracks. I feel a cold rush in my hands and head. The person staring at me has also stopped. I see another man's head poke around. There's two of them. I whisper to Nate. Slowly, we start walking around the tunnel towards the men. As we get closer, I walk faster out of fear. Bouncing off of the guy's chest is a large bush knife. He has filthy clothes, long matted hair, and has not broken eye contact. A revolver is chucked into his pants and he has a hunting rifle with a magazine. At this point, it's too late to run. I realize that my buddy and I are going to have to squeeze by these men on the narrow gap between the tracks. The brush is pulling at my sleeves on either side. How's it going? I nervously ask as I squeeze by them, avoiding eye contact. I count four guns in the stench of body odor. I'm unsettled by the way these guys look, and I got a feeling that I've never felt around anyone else before. Then say nothing and push past us. I kept hurrying away, and before I know, they're out of sight again. When I look behind me and past Nate, and we both look at each other. After walking silently for another 10 minutes, we stop. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't want to walk in deeper towards the creepy dudes again. Suddenly, loud moaning and shrieking starts coming from the dense woods off to the side. Sounds like it's 100 yards away. It doesn't sound fully human. I know the irony of this. We bolt back towards the cars. I'm not a runner, but we ran over to the bridge through the tunnel and through the endless green that surrounds us. Finally, I see the logging road up ahead where our car is parked. I stop running when I hear a truck idling. I can start to see it through the brush. A big old F-350 lift pickup truck idling behind my car. I now see both the men staring at us waiting, trying to hide. Nate and I shrug it off and look at each other, trying to act like we're not scared. We jump in and I stare at the men in my rearview mirror. They have their guns pointing to us. We can't move because that's when they'll attack us in fear. After waiting for what felt like an eternity, we realize the men haven't taken their eyes off us now. We can't back up, given how close they are. I then noticed a fairly solid looking shoulder to the right of my road, and I decided to pull a quick U-turn to get away. So that's what I did. Turned the wheel and floored it. Thankfully, my car was able to turn clear of theirs, and we drove as fast as we could down the logging road. We didn't even bother looking behind us. Our dust plume, hopefully, was enough of a screen for them to not be able to follow us. I drove all the way to Idaho that night, and had my eye on the rearview mirror the whole time.
Sometime around the beginning of July, I got off the bus in Boise, Idaho. When you get off the bus in downtown Boise, you're already near multiple showers, the skate park, a miles-long bike trail, the library, the zoo, and also the river and woods. It's a really beautiful area, in spite of the overabundance of undesirable characters. The first night I was there, I went from the bus station to the skate park to a place called Piss Alley. At some point, a middle-aged lady pulled up and just randomly started talking to us for no reason. She wasn't a junkie and she had a job, yet she just stood there in Piss Alley and talked to us for an hour about religion and conspiracy. I was really high for the first time in about 10 months. A lot about her made me think she was just some kind of undercover, but I ultimately decided that she was just a little bit crazy. She had a job and a car, and was capable of carrying on an intellectual conversation. We really hit it off, even though we had just met. She asked me if I'd like to go camping with her and one of her girlfriends the next day. She definitely seemed more appealing than the street thug I was talking to, so I agreed to go with them. They were going to be leaving in the afternoon, and so she said I could come with her now, or she could go get me later, after she picked up her friend from work. She took me out to eat, and we hung out at the park until her friend got off work. They made sure they had a tent and sleeping bag for me, and we headed off to their favourite place to camp. Long story short, we went out there, we did camping things, and we had fun and came back. I didn't get chopped up into little pieces, but I also didn't get chopped up. It was about 11 p.m. when she dropped me back at the Piss Alley. As I was getting out, this tweaker with long dregs approached her car, and he was talking really fast. He said, "I'm not on drugs, I don't have any drugs, I've got a couple of bucks, I need friends, we need a ride across town, and we need a ride real quick." I had barely shut my door by the time he finished his pitch. My lady friend looked like she wanted to give him a ride, but she told him she couldn't. He didn't hesitate to retaliate that he had a couple of bucks, and he just needed a ride real quick. She started beating around the bush, explaining that her car was too full with camping gear, she couldn't even fit them in the car. One of his friends was a girl who looked to be about 15 or 16. He was definitely on drugs, I could tell because, well, so was I. He was starting to reword his pitch for a third time when I interrupted him, being sure that I had his eye. I bluntly told him, "Hey, no, she can't give you a ride." Then I waved her on and she pulled away from the curb, leaving him and I looking at each other in the eyes. I could tell he was angry, I knew that in his mind, I disrespected him. Right away he fired off, "Who the hell are you? Is that your lady? Are you from around here? Do you know who I am? I'm TK. Everyone around here knows me. You must be brand new around here. You ask some people, they'll tell you. I run it around here." He went on to talk about how no one messes with him and how he's got everything. He was talking about how he got shooters all over town and he can just make a call and get someone show up and kill me. I'm pretty used to people saying stupid stuff like that, and I didn't really act scared or impressed, but I didn't scoff or mock either. I bought 20 bucks worth of dope from him, thinking it might calm him down. He pulled out a big bag of dope. He gave me a tiny piece of dope in the palm of his hand. We stared each other down, and I asked him if he was serious. He yelled at me that what he gave me was all I would need. He was offended that I didn't trust him. A crowd had gathered, all of them staring at me with a look on their face that I knew meant they were waiting for me to make a wrong move. They all had his back. I put my knife on my hand. But ultimately, I backed down. I propped the shard into my mouth like a little pill and swallowed it. This was going to end very badly. I was seething. I could glare, but I knew if I expressed my anger with any major outburst, it would result in me getting stomped. TK and his main few friends walked away about 15 yards and stood talking in a small circle. After a few minutes, that girl came over and started flirting with me. I completely ignored her. This was an obvious trap. If he could make it look like I was disrespecting him further, by so much as talking to a girl or his sister, in front of these people, he could gain more of their support. There were about 20 people in the alley now. I was starting to feel slightly paranoid. That shard was starting to kick in. If I was rude to the girl, that could be just as bad. So I answered a couple of her small talk questions with simple nods. She abruptly quit trying to be cute and walked back over to TK where his friends were, and he was on the phone. Next, a really big guy who might have been about 40, and another guy who might have been about 20, came up to me and started talking to me. The young kid didn't really say anything the entire time. He just stood there with a glazed over look in his eyes, like he was ready to kill. The older guy was a fat, tall man with a red goatee. He talked to me about very mundane things, and went back and forth from being very nice to giving me the same stare that the young guy gave me. I could tell he was trying to see if I was scared, and he was trying to see if I was an undercover cop. He was testing me in all kinds of ways, talking about crimes he committed in the past, and looking at me in a very intimidating, hateful way one second, then neutrally talking about the corner store in a cheerful manner the next second. The two of them talked to me, one on each side of me, with my back to the wall. They were closer to me than they should have been. Everybody else in the alley seemed to be oblivious to us, but there were the guys leaning against the wall at either end of the alley, just staring at us. I had three bags, one of which contained my laptop. I had cash on me, and I was wearing a nice leather jacket. I kept my hand on my knife the entire time. I was trying to be respectful, but also not look scared. I was starting to suspect that the shot I'd swallowed was actually bath salt, because on the inside, I was tripping. TK walked over and set his bag down next to my bag, and started going through his pocket like he was looking for something in his bag. I was just trying to maintain eye contact with the big guy now. Now I had to make sure he wasn't going to go through my bag too. I knew something was going to happen as soon as it did. I planned on flipping my knife open and sticking him swiftly and repeatedly. If I could, I would try and keep TK between me and the big guy while I stabbed him. I'm good with a knife and can take hits, but if I had to fight now, 3-on-1 would only be the first stage. There would be 3 or 5 more rushing after me. The only thing that saved me is that I casually hinted that I need to go get money from a lady who owed me. Without saying it directly, I led them to believe that I not only have money on me, but I would come back with some to buy more dope from them. Needless to say, I didn't plan on coming back. The rest of the night was very long, due to the effects of what I still believe were bath salts. I ran through the woods. I kept thinking I was being followed. I hid my bags in different places in the woods, so I could run without them if I had to. I was pretty scared, pretty sure I'd narrowly escaped with my life. I was so high. I came across a guy on the nature trail. He had a cloth bag in his hand, and I asked him what it was. He said it was just something he found on the trail, and then he threw it in the bushes. He was tweaked out like me. He seemed to sympathise as I told him the whole story of what just happened. He was going to take me somewhere safe, a camp where I could lay low. But I was unfamiliar with the area, so we were walking and talking, and the next thing I realised, we're heading right back to the piss alley, and we're about a block away. I yelled at him, and I was like, "What are you doing? I said he didn't want to come back here." He was saying that it was cool, he knew these people, and I was talking about how he could make everything okay by just telling them I was a good guy. I turned around and walked back into the woods. I went back to the area where he threw the bag. I found the bag and opened it. It was something of an adult nature. Randomly stopping to hide, stopping to listen to sounds for extended periods, and to try and figure out where they were, I came across another guy. He was about 20. In the end, he helped me keep safe. He took me to an island, where the river split around a piece of land underneath a bridge. I fell asleep there and woke up in the middle of the night to a random couple putting a blanket over me. I said thanks and went right back to sleep. After a couple of days, I got used to boys. I found out that TK had made national news. The same night I stopped him from getting in Christian Lady's car. He convinced a couple of them to let him sleep in their apartment. I can just imagine him telling them, just like he told us, "I'm not on drugs, I don't have any drugs." At some point, he started acting really weird, cracked out. They planned on having their 3-year-old daughter's birthday party later that day, so they told him he had to leave, and he left. But then he came back and stabbed 9 people, 6 kids and 3 adults. One of those kids was a 3-year-old whose party it was. The people he was upset with weren't even there during the party, but he stabbed these kids anyway. He killed a 3-year-old at a birthday party. What a coward. Over the next 5 months, I got more acquainted with boys and this very weird junkie population. The people that had his back that night, most of them still miss him and acted like he never did anything wrong. When I went looking for details in his case, I just found out that he was getting into the needle, but the psychiatric had almost got him off the hook. He won't actually be tried by jury until 2020. That little girl is already dead. He should have been dead 6 months ago, right after it happened, or before it happened. I can't help but wonder that if it was fate that put me in the position that I could have taken him out, but I can't really think of it like that. Yeah, I might have saved that lady from getting in her car, but maybe I was supposed to get rid of him in that confrontation that never really escalated. I knew he was dangerous, I knew he was evil, but all I did was get myself out of the danger, and look what happened. In the future, if I'm ever put in a situation like that, I honestly don't know that I won't consider taking action to be doing the world a favour. What if I failed fate? How am I supposed to sleep now?
My husband and I went camping for the first time ever in Arizona as part of our long trip out west. I had picked out this really cool place. It was on a mountain overlooking a beautiful landscape. It's next to a cliff and in a really isolated location. I'm talking like 20 miles on gravel roads in the middle of a national forest. So, we get there, set up our tent, and hike a little bit and take pictures of the surrounding area. We see a few cars parked around two tents and decide to stop and talk to some of the other campers nearby because we heard that there was going to be a bad storm that night. These were four guys who are from Arizona telling us not to worry about the storm. That was all persuading. We felt okay and decided to stay. Later on, we were walking a bit further down the campsite. We see a woman there with her dog and another older lady. We smile and wave. We continue to hike down a bit further into the forest. Now let me elaborate that because of the storm, we are one among maybe a total of seven campers that decide to stay and withstand the night. We watch a sunset when we get back to our campsite. Make sure our car was only a few yards away, getting into our tent when it gets dark. There are no stars out tonight. Due to the storm clouds, and it hasn't begun to rain yet, so we decide to try and sleep right away so that we could possibly sleep through the storm when it does hit. It's an insanely windy night, so it's hard to sleep, but eventually we get a bit of shut-eye. I wake up at 10:30 to the sound of some crazy thunder rolling through the mountains and rain hitting down on our tent. I'm a little freaked out because they get a lot of flash floods here and I don't want to fall off a cliff. But I tell myself try and sleep and eventually I doze off again. It's 12 a.m. now and I'm awake again. This time because I hear something heavy hitting the side of our tent. Full on like the sound of somebody punching the side, trying to tear it down. I open my eyes. I can't see anything. It's completely dark. No light whatsoever. The sound continues every couple of minutes and now I'm terrified. Suddenly, I hear footsteps right to the next of my tent. They are slow but steady. I feel my entire body freeze. I'm seriously starting to think about how weird it is and that I'm gonna die. My heart is beating so fast that I am certain that whatever it is out there can hear me. Then, whatever it is lets out a deep sigh right on the opposite side of the tent. I'm thinking it's a bear and realizing that I may actually have to face this thing. So, in a desperate call for my husband's mind-reading powers, I squeeze his hand really hard and he wakes up. Instead of reading my mind, he says, "What's wrong? Why are you squeezing my hand?" Right as he says this, the footsteps stop. I don't hear the footsteps again. So after a while, I break out of my frozen state and tell him what I heard. We decide it may be an animal passing by, but whoever it is hitting our tent continuously every so often. I feel like I'm starting to go a little insane from this night, wondering what's going on. We convince ourselves that it's just pines falling from the trees above and try and sleep again. We just need to make it through one night. Now a couple of minutes go by and suddenly the tent caves in on my husband's side, right on his head. He whispers that it feels like something's pushing down inside the tent. I feel my heart instantly sink. I'm freaking out, thinking it's a bear that just sat on his head, but he decides to push back. We hear the same sound on the other side that we heard before. We realize it's been snowing outside, and the noise could be heavy ice. We're determined to make it through the night, a little relieved that we think it's just ice and not a bear. We decide to try and make it to sunrise. We kept on a small light that my husband luckily brought with him to calm us down. Things seem to be back to normal. We try and sleep. It's 3 a.m. now. Not even half an hour goes by that my worst nightmare happens. Out of the pitch black, we hear someone screaming. We both say, "What the hell?" We then hear someone scream out, "No, please stop and help." The way that she screamed doesn't sound like anger, but pure terror. My husband and I are both froze looking at each other. I quickly shut off our light and start panicking, asking what we should do because what's happening? While we're trying to decide what to do, we hear it again. She's screaming no. We then hear a car speed off. At this point, we're in tears. We have no idea what's happening. It's deadly silent now, save from the icy rain hitting our tent. It definitely sounded like she wasn't in the car, but more like she was desperately yelling after being hurt. This is breaking point now, because I could take the bad weather. I could take the possibility of a bear, but not somebody potentially dying out there. We decide to get the hell out of there, and even contemplate leaving our tent and booking it to the car, but we instead try to stay level-headed and grab our valuables, putting them in the car first. We frantically gather our things, stay close as we shuffle to our car. I close the door and keep the lights off for a while, scared to attract any unwelcome visitors. And while my husband goes back to grab the tent, I call 911. I start the car. I tell them what's happened and they're sending someone to our campsite to make sure everything's okay. Only thing is, we're in literally the middle of nowhere and it'll definitely take them more than an hour to get here at least. Not to mention, the storm left those gravel roads in terrible conditions. So my husband and I decide to start driving. It's 3:30 now. As we drive out of the campsite, my husband notices one last eerie detail that stuck with me. The four guys that we had talked to earlier had left. All three of their cars were gone while their tents remained. Whatever scared them off, they sure left in a hurry. It was only after we started driving that it occurred to me. Whatever was walking next to my tent was not an animal. It's probably someone looking in the dark, lurking for a victim. This terrifies me. I'm not quite sure what went down there. I just hope everyone got out okay.
Back in 2011, I was within a circle of friends that made it tradition to go camping at a certain spot every May long weekend. The spot we chose was in a beautiful area, right on the edge of a large lake, and was located on government land. The lake itself had a dam on it, so during May long, the water levels were always low, if not completely empty, making it possible to walk across it. People were allowed to camp there, as long as they weren't causing any trouble or making a mess, and it was generally a good time for everyone. The spot themselves were spaced far enough apart that you had your own privacy, but not far enough that you couldn't meet other people. In this particular year, our spot was in the middle of a small hill, with one campsite below us and one above us. The first night of our trip happened without incident. During the second day, the people were staying at the site below us had just moved in. We didn't think much of it, and continued drinking throughout the day and into the night. At around midnight, the people at the campsite below us were really out of control. They were yelling and screaming, and their music had gotten even louder. So our friend Ben went down to ask them to turn it down. He was promptly punched in the face, and came back to inform us that he was 90% sure they were on drugs. After that, the vibe wasn't as relaxed, and we were all somewhat on edge. I was feeling really tired, so I just decided to go to bed. Some of my friends were still awake, including Ben, and one couple, Lily and Derek, that were visiting another campsite we'd made friends with that day. I could hear the camp below us still blasting the music and partying pretty hard, but I just tried to ignore it in sleep. I don't know what time it was when I jolted awake. Parts of this are somewhat a blur. All I know is that I sat up straight as soon as I heard the screaming and yelling coming from outside my tent. I quickly ran outside to find a campsite in chaos. One of my friends was clutching their chest. People were running around and screaming to call 911. I was quickly informed what happened. Apparently, not long after I'd gone to bed, the people camping at the site below us decided they weren't finished talking to Ben, and on their way up, they had encountered Lily and Derek walking back. Now Derek and Ben are about the same height and have the same colour hair, so they assumed that Derek was Ben and bottled him and Lily over the head with a full glass bottle. I don't know if it was the same guys that showed up to our campsite, but I was told that everyone else was sitting around the fire when two or three huge guys appeared from the darkness and walked over to them. One had a paring knife and the other had a butcher's knife in their hand. Ben saw the knives and had gotten up to talk to them, and barely spoken a word when the guy with the paring knife stabbed him once in the chest. At the same time, some people from the campsite above had just seen the guys coming back and down to help. One of them guys, Tim, was coming down the hill when the guy with the butcher's knife ran up to him and stabbed him in the stomach. From there, sheer panic ensued. People called 911, but the ambulance was over half an hour away. This is where I came out of the tent. Tim's wound was bleeding profusely, and he was losing blood too quickly. His friends ended up putting him in the back of his car and speeding off to meet the ambulance halfway. Ben was also bleeding, but his wound wasn't as deep as Tim's, and we were able to keep him calm until the ambulance arrived. The guys with the knives ran off into the darkness, back down to their campsite, and took off in their Land Rover. My boyfriend at the time had gotten into his car and drove to the entrance to try and flag down the policemen on their way back to the scene. Once they arrived, we were informed to stay in the car, as they had released a canine search unit to hunt down the people who stabbed their friends. By the end of the night, they had arrested the men. They had tried to flee by driving their vehicle across the lake bed, where they got stuck in a muddy section of the lake. They were on a concoction of several drugs, as suspected. Luckily, both Tim and Ben survived, though Tim had lost a lot of blood and took a few weeks to recover from his wounds. Derek and Lily had huge goose heads, and possibly one person had a concussion, but I can't recall. It was definitely the scariest thing that I've ever experienced, and a few of us had to testify against them in court. I just found this sub, and I have quite a few stories. I live in rural western Pennsylvania. There's a mix of everyone out here. Punks, meth heads, potheads, Bible thumpers, all in our area. I'm the kind of guy who wants to help. Just the other day, I stopped some random guy on the highway, looking a little lost. The encounter was more pleasant anyway. Back when I was 16, fresh to the world, I was driving to work, and there was an older lady, grey and confused, looking at the gas station right behind my work. I pulled up and asked if anything was wrong. She was visibly distracted and confused. She started rambling about her kids in the truck. The heat wasn't working. She needed to help them get to their dad. A bunch of stuff. I asked her if she had talked to anyone at the gas station, and that I had pulled over to help her go if she was uncomfortable. She must have taken that as a ticket to get in my car. She opened the door, sat down, and looked at me with a moment of clarity and said, "Drive," as she hit the power locks on the door. I was stunned, not physically intimidated, but just taken aback by how forceful it was. After a second equal oomph, I said, "Miss, I'm sorry, but get out." She looked at me again and said, "No, drive." I replied again, "Get out my car." With that, she slipped out of intent and went back to her confused rant on the other side of the road. Who knows where the hell she wanted me to drive, but I wasn't cool with going wherever she wanted me to go.